instant. I'd never been known for my quick thinking under stress. This was a recent improvement. That's exactly what constant interactions with mobs and high-level players can do to you. Mechanically, blindly even, I set a swarm of fleas onto my attacker. You've built the simplest mechanical creature, a swarm of fleas. Level 170. Number of swarm members, 8. There were 8 of them this time. Level 170. I felt sorry for this Regren or whatever his name was. He was only level 112. The wizard cussed, investing all his amazement in a few choice words. And that was only the beginning. Trust me. I rolled over to the wall and froze in a crouching position, taking in the situation. There were 5 of them, levels 100 to 130. I couldn't make out their nicknames from this distance. 2 wizards, judging by their outfits, the other 3 swordsmen. Their gear was blue, but not top level. The Alvin player at the center was especially picturesque. His suit of armor glinted in the rays of the setting sun. His greaves and gauntlets were purple. He was quite a handsome sight. I had a funny feeling I'd already seen something very similar. Somewhere. I clenched the teleport crystal in my right hand, activating it, then scrolled through the impressive list of potential destinations. Yes! The Ennin City. Would you like to teleport to your chosen destination? Yes? No. I was just about to press yes when a nasty little voice disrupted my thoughts. Get that bastard! Don't let him escape! How could I ever forget that voice? Talk about bad luck. It was Shantarsky Jr., a.k.a. Lord Melwas, as large as life and twice as ugly. What was it his millionaire banker daddy had said about his precious son?
He's too young and too quick off the mark. For him, you're nothing.
What else had he said?
Power is the only language he understands. You might say you're a human being, but that's not enough for him. I've been raising him to be a leader, proud and strong. I've taught him never to bow his head to any Tom, Dick, or Harry.
Very well. I might be a regular Dick, but I wasn't going to run from him this time. I wasn't their quarry anymore. Only now had I realized that I'd been waiting for this moment all this time. I looked around me. Idle players started arriving at the scene. Rotim's front door opened again, letting out a whole crowd of them. They weren't in a hurry to interfere, though, too curious to see how this show might end for me. I returned the teleport crystal to the bag, but kept the summoning charms close at hand. Then I stepped back toward the wall to safeguard myself against any overzealous onlookers who might decide to stand up for Shantarsky Jr. I found it strange I didn't see any of the local clan's members. This was happening on their territory, and they didn't seem to care. What was the name again? Was it the Steel Fists? Oh, well. They must have decided to turn a blind eye. Apparently, a neutral clan is supposed to remain neutral, even on their own turf. I heard screaming as the fleas had finally got to Regren. That was quick. Less than 15 seconds. The other wizard actually tried to help his colleague. He began shooting some sort of fireballs at the fleas, while the swordsmen were trying to outflank me, brandishing their weapons. Unfortunately, all the Wizzy had achieved was to attract the swarm's attention. Some of the fleas left their victim and went after him with a vengeance. A new system message promptly informed me of all the details. The other Wizzy's name was Zarlug, level 104. His chances were even worse. Melwis was full of surprises, however. He bared his sword and rushed to the wizard's rescue. He was actually quite good. He very nearly killed one of the fleas. No wonder with his level 130. With a bit more durability, my little beauties would be priceless. Right. While those three were tied down doing some pest control, I could turn my attention to the swordsmen. They were almost upon me. The one to the right was a Rog. Name, Armadon. Level, 128. The one to my left was a level 100 human called Rid. They moved swiftly but cautiously. Their faces betrayed their anxiety about the strange behavior of the other three. I wasn't surprised. I would have been anxious, too. It hadn't gone exactly as their underage leader had planned, had it? They tensed, preparing to attack me. Sorry, guys. You've built the simplest mechanical creature, a scorpion. Level 150. None of them expected a steely level 150 insect the size of an SUV, which had appeared completely out of the blue. Even I stood speechless, staring at his massive pincers and his long tail tipped with a sting. The crowd gasped as one, recoiling. The swordsmen's faces lost some of their enthusiasm. Zarlug screamed, apparently expressing his displeasure with the venom of the swamp monk. That was my last vial. What a shame. This was a perfect psychological weapon. My little babies had suffered some losses, too. Shantarsky Jr. had managed to smoke two of the fleas. He seemed to be getting the hang of it. Not that it was going to last, though. Very soon, the fleas were obliged to notice the new target. The swordsmen began gulping down elixirs, changing their tactics. They stood shoulder to shoulder, preparing to defend themselves, or, should I say, to play for time. I couldn't help smiling. I could read them like an open book. They must have contacted some top-level colleagues, who in turn must have asked them to hold the fort until they arrived. I didn't like the idea. At the moment, I was a cut above my enemies. Until now, I'd been a passive onlooker. But that might not last. Judging by the two swordsmen's gleefully expectant faces, they were awaiting some heavy cavalry, and I couldn't afford to face it quite yet. Never mind. Impatient as I was to get to their magnificent Lord Melwis, I might have to leave it till some other time. Honestly, after what I'd just seen, it didn't seem to be such a good idea anymore. If anything, I felt slightly ashamed of myself. Had I really wanted to wreak my revenge on this kid? I activated both summoning charms. The audience gasped their admiration at the sight of my two beasts. I leapt into the saddle as Melwis strained his voice over the melee. My clan guarantees protection and a fair reward to anyone who stops him! The crowd stirred. Exactly what I hadn't wanted to happen. I hurried to issue orders, telling Boris to take off, Pranky to cast his shield, and the scorpion to cover our retreat. Hissing and snapping his pincers, the scorpion began to back off. I sensed Boris's body tense up as he prepared to take to the sky. That's when a fiery spindle shot out of the crowd. Not the fastest of spells, but then again, nothing seemed fast enough to me after Furious and his arrows. The spindle barely grazed us as we took off, and was completely absorbed by Pranky's shield. I didn't bother to strike back, afraid of hurting our supporters in the crowd. Still, I remembered the caster's name, just in case. Chapter 7. We were about to drop into the clouds when the system informed me of the two wizards' death. Despite the penalty I'd received for fleeing the battlefield, I'd managed to make level 98. Excellent. Me and my team kept growing. Below, Shantarsky Jr. kept cussing and raging, promising to stuff me and make mincemeat out of me. Yeah, yeah. The fleas must have turned their attention to him already. He probably had more important things to do with his time than chasing after me. Somehow I didn't think his cavalry would make it here in time to help him. The chat window flashed with new messages. I opened it.
That was cool, dude.
Totally awesome!
I loved it.
There were at least 30 more messages in the same vein, as well as a few friend requests. Naturally, I'd also received a few threats from today's opponents, and a long epistle in all caps from Shantarsky Jr. I shoved everything into the recycle bin. Having said that, wait a sec. One nickname seemed familiar. It was she who'd warned me about the ambush to begin with. She'd left a brief description of her character in the letterhead. Normally, I never used that option. My friends already knew everything they needed to know about me. Still, it was a nice gesture. I glanced over the information she'd so helpfully provided. Name, Elrica. Level, 37. Race, human. That was the extent of it. Not that I needed to know anything else. Actually, there was something else. A screenshot depicting a beaming blue-haired girl astride a pink panther. Judging by her light armor and the fancy staff behind her back, she belonged to one of the magic classes. She merited a reply. Hi, Elrica. Thanks a lot for the tip. Shame I read it too late. I pressed send. For a while, nothing happened. I was about to close the chat window when she finally replied.
Hi. You replied to my message. I must be dreaming.
The letter was peppered with a variety of cheerful emoticons. I just couldn't understand her. Then again, why not? For most people, this was a game. Unlike myself, they were in it simply for a good time. Of course I replied to your message. I had to thank you. You were the only one who warned me.
You're welcome. It was awesome. What a fight. A giant scorpion. Your pets are out of this world. And your fleas. Oh, those fleas. You know what they now call those Gold Guild idiots in the forum? Flea bags and mangy dogs. LOL.
She was something else. My eyes flickered with all the grinning little faces. Then it must have dawned on her.
Wait a sec. What do you mean, I was the only one? Do you mean to say that no one else had warned you?
That's exactly what I'm saying, I wrote back. You were the only one who did.
But that's not possible!
She added a dozen of her bug-eyed, dropped-jaw emoticons.
I heard some guys in my group discuss the arrival of the Gold Guild warriors. It was Drox who tipped them off, apparently. I can't believe they didn't warn you.
Drox. Wait a sec. I definitely heard that name before. But of course, he cast that fire thing on us, didn't he? Still, I had a funny feeling I'd heard the name before.
Drox is the one who attacked you with a fire twister, wretched shaman. A sorry excuse for a dwand. Yes, of course. Drox. That was the funny guy hung with charms and ribbons who pestered me with questions last time I was here.
Is he a Gold Guild spy? I typed.
Yeah, I think so. Sort of. He's basically a Major Brown Nose who sucks up to Melwis. Our rich daddy's boy, Melwis, a.k.a. the flea bag. I just love it. You know your fleas took him apart, don't you? Armadin and Rid were really lucky. The Ner'zhul group saved them just in time. It's a good thing you left when you did. Ner'zhul's warriors are all level 200+. They're the top.
Are they? How interesting. How long did it take them to kill my scorpion?
Not very long, but it did give them a good run for their money, LOL. A lot of people have got a bit more respect for you now.
Do they? Why?
Don't you understand? You're not a top-level player, and still you managed to defeat a whole group. They had to request help from a top-level group because they couldn't handle a single player. You're a hero.
I winced. Oh, great. A hero. That was the last thing I needed.
Can I ask you a question?
Damn it. Here we go. Now she'll want to know everything about me. All the hows and whys. Of course. On one condition.
Which is?
Promise not to get angry with me if I choose not to answer it.
Of course. I mean, no, I won't. I understand.
Okay, I typed. Fire away.
You see, I study journalism.
Excellent. I'm very happy for you.
Thank you. The thing is, I have this vlog on the side.
How interesting. What's it all about?
Basically, it's about everything that happens here in the glasshouse. I call it Elrica and her little mirror. I just update my subscribers on all the local news.
I'd love to check it out sometime, but unfortunately I'm pretty busy.
Of course, I understand. I just wondered if you might find an hour or so whenever you're available.
To do what?
To allow me to interview you.
More emoticons. Shy and embarrassed this time. Interview me? Do I look like the president? Or a movie star?
I don't think you have any idea how popular you are.
I don't think I have. And what's more, I don't think I've ever been interviewed before. Not that I look forward to the experience.
In that case, let's do it this way. I won't insist if you promise not to say no. Let's just file this conversation for future reference, okay? If one day you reconsider, we'll discuss it further. Is that a deal?
Deal, I replied. I liked the fact that she was tactful and not pushy. She must have realized that my present situation was a bit sensitive.
Yes!
She showered me with another load of happy, grinning faces.
Feel free to write to me anytime. I'll add you to favorites.
And so will I. Thank you. You can write to me anytime you want. There's one problem, though. I might not be in a position to reply promptly.
That's all right. I understand. Oh, and if by any chance you get the opportunity to make a few short videos about No Man's Lands, that would be fantastic. I could post them on my channel. That'll definitely boost my subscribers' numbers. These videos are very few, and they're crazy popular. And a battle video could guarantee millions of views.
Oh, well, why not? The girl seemed quite nice. The squeaky, clean Doris Day type. And she'd been the only one who'd warned me of the danger. At my wife's request, I'd actually been filming quite a lot. I used to send her the nicest videos to show to our little Krista. I could give Elrica one of them, I suppose. How about the one taken from Boris's back as we flew over the river? The one with all the giant fish jumping. She might like it. I think I might have something you could use, I typed.
No way! Thank you!
Ignoring a new emoticon attack, I pressed Attach File, selected the 10-minute river video, and sent it to her. There you go. More thank yous, and a new shower of emoticons grinning from ear to ear. Could she even speak without them? On this friendly note, we closed our exchange with more promises from me to think about the interview. When I finally closed the chat window, I felt absolutely drained. That's it, kiddo. Let's go home. Boris, who'd all this time been soaring regally above the clouds, banked into a smooth turn and alighted with a single stroke of his big wings. We were already within a few minutes from No Man's Lands when my inbox pinged. Who might that be? Oh, Elrica again. I braced myself for a new emo attack. That's right. The girl was true to herself, ending every sentence with grinning, funny faces. So, what did she have to say? Aha. It looked like I'd just got myself a spy all of my own. Apparently, Shantorsky Sr. had just visited the battlefield. According to her, he wasn't happy at all. He'd yelled at the surviving swordsman. The girl was standing too far to hear it all, but what she had heard was, "A bunch of idiots! That wretched noob!" and, "You missed him!" She seemed quite offended by him calling me a noob. Apparently, so were lots of other people, according to her.
"No noob would ever be able to do what you did today," she wrote.
I just loved her pro-noob enthusiasm. Then again, I wasn't the clueless klutz that had first entered the glass house trying to walk to the nearest town on a few energy points. In a brief postscript, she praised my video, promising to upload it to her channel later that same night. Whatever. As long as it kept her happy. Chapter 8.
"We've got visitors,"
Droy announced the moment I touched the ground. I could see he was struggling to suppress his agitation. Orman and Krim stood next to him, both equally on edge. What visitors were they talking about? The sun was about to set. I hadn't headed home straight away, as I'd decided to check out the nearby locations. To tell you the truth, I hadn't liked what I saw there at all. Now I was really hacked off. The last thing I needed were mysterious guests whose arrival had already made the usually impassive Droy nervous.
"Who do you mean?"
I asked, jumping off Boris's back.
"The wolves,"
the three men replied in unison. I frowned. "Which wolves? Animals, you mean?"
"You could say that,"
Orman replied grimly. The others nodded. Jesus. What was that now?
"The Northern Wolves,"
Droy explained.
"A Kaltian clan." "Wolves? They're coyotes!"
Krim growled his indignation. The others nodded.
"You're right. They are."
"Traitors!"
"It was them who warned us about the Noctian hordes arriving to claim Silver Mountain Valley,"
Droy explained.
"But when they attacked, the wolves chose to leave for the Orion Steppe. They refused to fight.
They fled the battlefield with their tails between their legs."
Orman butted in.
They're horse dealers. What do you want? Cowards.
They're nomads,
Krim agreed.
They roam from place to place without settling down. How can you trust them?
Are they friends or foes? I asked.
Neither,
Droy replied, scratching his beard.
We don't consider them our brothers. They're Chaldeans, yes, but still, they're different. We were never enemies, but we were never friends either.
I nodded. Very well, that much is clear. But how did they find us?
We told them,
Droy replied calmly. I couldn't believe what I'd just heard. It's one thing to be accidentally discovered by another clan's scouts who just happened to wander too far off to the north, chancing on the Forbidden City. But to basically invite them here was something totally different. Also, how had they communicated? It's not as if the Chaldeans had their own postal system in place. How did you do that? I asked.
They followed my magic marks,
Leosh said, behind my back. I turned around.
I can see it in your eyes that you're worried.
The old man walked over to us.
You don't need to be. Only Chaldean shamans know how to read their secret signs. The wolf scouts had a May with them. He's their young shaman and the clan leader. He may be a bit hot-headed, but he's not as headstrong as their previous chief.
Do you mean to say, I began, that you kept leaving magic messages marking your journey? He nodded.
I did.
What did you say in those messages?
The Forbidden City belongs to the Red Owls.
He had a freaking cheek. Did that mean he'd left those messages behind even before we'd claimed the city? How were you even supposed to keep these guys in control? Are you sure that no one else can read those signs? I asked, struggling to sound calm. The old man smiled.
Absolutely.
I heaved a sigh, trying to take in the news philosophically. Before, I might have freaked out, but by now, I'd already gotten used to my new friend's antics. Still, there was no guarantee that some player might not be able to decipher those signs. Then again, why should I worry myself sick about it? So they'd decipher the signs, big deal. They still wouldn't be able to use the information. The Chaldeans were the only ones who knew about the Forbidden City. Nobody else had any idea about its existence, let alone its whereabouts. I had to get a grip. The men stood there, waiting for my decision. Very well. Take me to these wolves of yours. The wolf scouts had set up camp in the towering ruins of the collapsed city gate. They didn't start a fire for fear of attracting unwanted attention. As we walked downhill, they were already expecting us. Their sentries knew what they were doing. But still, I noticed them before they noticed me. I had this little trick up my sleeve. Literally. The bracelet of Tai Ko, the thin strip of gold studded with tiny emeralds which was currently hugging my wrist, gave plus 30 points to observation skills. Rorgus had sent it to me, together with two rings fashioned from Druckarm bone, whatever that was supposed to mean, which gave me another plus 25 points. And finally, the Tamian necklace, an unpretentious chain with added plus 55 points to gut feeling. I could see all those stats as separate lines in my character's chart, even though they performed the same functions as my survival instinct. If you sum them all up, they trebled my power of observation. Which was why I immediately noticed the wolves' sentries lurking behind the giant slabs of collapsed masonry. Judging by Laosh's untroubled face, he too knew about them. How interesting. I really needed to give his stats a closer look. I'd never had the chance to do that. I could see the scouts now, even though they were still too far away to make out their faces. They were the same height as the Red Owls. Their brown horses were rather bulky, but short, with large, round bellies. Actually, I turned to Droy. You don't have many horses, do you?
We used to,
Orman grumbled.
Before the epidemic claimed them,
Droy added.
And when the Noctians came, we never had too many.
Seat butted in.
They're too fragile. Buffaloes are much better. They're hardy and strong. Easy to control, too. They can last a long time without food or water.
They're not afraid of the cold,
Laosh added. Judging by their enthusiasm, the Red Owls seem to like their pets a lot. How about my buffalo coat? I'm so happy I have it, I joined in, earning myself a few nods of approval. Talking in quiet voices, we finally approached our visitors. They really looked a lot like the Red Owls, stocky and slant-eyed. Their hair and beards were black, but their skin seemed slightly lighter than that of the owls. They were armed with composite bows and scimitars dangling from their belts. Spears were strapped to their saddles. All of their weapons were gray. I hadn't noticed a single green item. The warriors stood with their arms spread wide, palms up. Uneasy smiles froze on their tired faces. What does that mean? I whispered to Laosh.
Look at their hands,
he hurried to explain in a low voice.
Can you see the green ribbons tied around their wrists? This means they've come in peace.
Orman grinned.
Or that they're surrendering.
We stopped within a few yards of the newcomers. They stood, without lowering their arms, their stares prickly. The biggest and shaggiest one glared at me, his disheveled mane and beard peppered with gray. His furrowed face appeared mature, but not old. There was something of the wild animal about him. His name was Pike, level 270. He had a massive bow behind his back, as well as a quiver packed solid with fat arrows. Two scimitars graced his belt. He looked over my gear, then cast a quick glance at Boris behind me and squinted, apparently impressed. A young Chaldean stood at the center of the group. He was just as stocky as the rest of them, but his beard was somewhat thinner. This was Amay, the shaman and leader of the Northern Wolves. Despite his young age, he already boasted the highest level in the group, 293. This was one hell of a strong and dangerous NPC. Unlike his clanmates, Amay looked relaxed, his eyes kind, his smile sincere. Okay, time to break the uneasy silence. I am Olgird, the keeper of Twilight Castle, I said with calm dignity. What has brought you to the land of my ancestors? Their faces betrayed surprise. Apparently it wasn't me they'd expected to see as the city keeper. The young shaman quickly recovered from his shock.
I am Amei, the leader of the Northern Wolves. When I saw the message left by Honorable Laosh, I decided to summon my finest warriors and go visit our best friends.
Judging by my men's grim faces, they didn't share these professions of friendship. In any case, seeing as we weren't at war with each other, we were obliged to let them in. They were bound to have some news for us. We might even learn something useful, you never know. And, in any case, we couldn't stand there all day, not with Noctian scouts prowling around. Very well, I said, without a smile. Old friends are always welcome. My invitation received a mixed reaction. The red owls growled their discontent, while Amei and his wolves grinned triumphantly. You can grin all you want, buddy. The system wanted my confirmation to let in a group of 10 riders. I pressed yes. Amei nodded to his men. They hurried to cross to the safe side, leading their horses by their reins. They must have had their fair share of unpleasant encounters along their journey. With every step they took, their grins faded. These steppe nomads looked around themselves open-mouthed. No wonder. This place was the stuff of their childhood nightmares since time immemorial. You'd think that the red owls were already used to it, but they too cast wary glances around, peering into the gloom of the ancient ruins. As Orman and Krim were trying to find accommodation for the wolves' warriors, Laosh, Droy, Amei, and myself retired to Laosh's tent for the bread-sharing ritual. For the Chaldeans, eating bread together was a sign of friendship, so now our guests had no reason to worry for their lives. Once we'd finished with all the formalities, Laosh got down to business.
So, what has brought our valiant stepbrothers to our lands?
Laosh was on a roll tonight. He managed to imbue the word valiant with a hefty dose of sarcasm, and the way he'd pronounced our lands, you might think this place had belonged to the Red Owls since time immemorial. If Amei had been hurt, he didn't show it. He might have even chosen to ignore the shaman's petty sarcasms. Why would a wolf's leader react to them, really? Unlike all the other Chaldean clan leaders who'd wasted their precious time quarreling, he'd left their council and saved his clan by retreating into the steppes. According to Krim, the wolves still had almost 400 warriors. Despite all his experience, Laosh seemed to be naively thinking that this young leader, who was wise beyond his years, might take offense at his childish jabs. Why would he? Who was Laosh anyway? A stubborn old fool who'd very nearly led his clan to its death? Not very likely. I wasn't going to interfere quite yet. I wanted to keep a low profile for a while, keeping an eye on young Amei and his burly friend Pike, who followed him everywhere like a bad smell. Now he too was sitting at a respectful distance from us, concealing a cunning smile within his shaggy beard, apparently amused at our old man's pompous antics.
"We followed your signs, O wise shaman,"
Amei replied calmly.
"Please don't misinterpret our intentions. It's not every day we get word that one of the Chaldean clans is loading it up in the Forbidden City. I wanted to see it with my own eyes.
His ahem was pregnant with meaning, as if he'd been about to say something rather unflattering. Laosh swallowed the hint, ignoring it entirely, then resumed his attack.
So how do you like our land? If the truth were known, I expected more from it,
Amay replied with a crooked smile. This time he'd overdone it. His reply sounded like a childish quip in a grown-up's argument. Even Pike cringed. The Forbidden City was the Chaldean version of El Dorado. Whoever said he wasn't duly impressed by it was either a pompous idiot or a liar. Laosh suppressed a smile, apparently pleased with the result. Amay's face didn't twitch. Still, his eyes betrayed his annoyance at losing the first round to a more experienced schemer. He squinted.
I can sense some powerful protection magic here. This is true.
Laosh stuck out a proud chin.
The city's protected by great wizards.
Aha. Amay pensively rubbed his scraggly beard.
My mentor always told me that magic is like a fire. If you want it to burn long and strong, you shouldn't throw all your firewood in it at once. You should add wood to it bit by bit. Your mentor must have been wise amongst Chaldeans,
Laosh replied ceremoniously.
Still, there's no need to shiver next to a weak flame when you have plenty of firewood. It'd be much better to get warm by a powerful fire, wouldn't it?
Oh. The old man was bluffing so masterfully, you really couldn't feel a thing. He had to. No one else should know about the magic sphere's 2-week deadline. Even though the wolves weren't exactly enemies, we shouldn't drive them to temptation.
Well, if that's the case, then you don't need to worry.
Amay smiled.
The ancient magic will protect you.
Protect us? I asked. Against what? I know, of course, that these lands are fraught with danger. I just wondered if you might know something definite.
How is it possible?
Amay exclaimed theatrically.
Don't you know yet?
Laosh, Droy, and I exchanged glances. My back erupted in a cold sweat. Know what? Now it was Amay's turn to exchange glances with Pike. They seemed to be sincerely surprised.
The Horde is coming.
That's what it was. This was the bugbear that hadn't left me alone all this time. All my recon sorties had finally pieced together into a finished picture. And not a very good one, either. All this time I'd been watching small groups of Noctian scouts sneak about nearby locations. I thought it was the standard scenario, because I'd seen similar things in Blackwood and other places. I thought it was normal for NPC mobs to stay in one place, respawning as they got smoked. That was my mistake. After some time in No Man's Lands, you can fall into the trap of thinking you're already a local. You think you know everything, until you receive a flick on the nose like a naughty puppy. It's a bit like seeing all the signs of the looming rain cloud and still leaving the umbrella behind. Did I tell you about Pyotr Alexandrovich, our sociology professor? We'd nicknamed him the Colonel. At 56, he still preserved his ramrod-straight military bearing. He was always clean-shaven and well-dressed. His suits weren't expensive, but they hung perfectly. This was a case of a man doing justice to his clothes, and not the other way round. My classmate, Sergei, used to live on the same block as him. He told us stories about the colonel's morning jogs and exhausting athletic workouts. The colonel didn't smoke or drink, nor did he eat fast food. As we later found out, he'd even written a few healthy lifestyle books. He was one of those health aficionados whose sole goal in life is to die healthy, as we say in Russia. I still remember the day when they told us that he'd actually died. It was a wet Tuesday in October. Sociology was our first class. We'd sensed something was wrong. The colonel was a whopping 5 minutes late. Nothing like that had ever happened before. Not in our year, at least. His punctuality was legendary. You could literally set your watch by the guy. 5 minutes late? We were rubbing our hands in anticipation, thinking of all the jokes we could make. He had a good sense of humor, in fact. His frequent sarcasms were always funny and to the point. Then the door opened, and the principal walked in, looking grim. He told us that the colonel had been knocked down by a car as he was crossing the street, heading for the university. The media picked up on the story. Very soon after, that particular pedestrian crossing was fitted with a speed bump, something that the colonel had been campaigning for several years prior to his death. We all came and held a memorial service next to it. The promptly built bump on the tarmac was covered in flowers. It made it look like a grave. Oh. Now, why would I be thinking about that? Probably because you can never be fully prepared. The man had led a healthy lifestyle, battling old age as best he could. But death has its own dirty tricks. It doesn't care about your best-laid plans. I used to fear the upcoming war with the united powers of light and dark, but now it looks like that was the least of my problems.
"Are you sure they're heading this way?"
Droy the Fang asked grimly.
"Unfortunately," Amei replied.
"How far are they?"
"They'll be here before the new moon," Amei concluded.
"That's 3 weeks from now. I had 3 weeks to find that wretched twilight obelisk, damn it! And then what? Even if I managed to activate it, how would that save the Chaldeans? I might fulfill my obligations to the bank, but what was going to happen to my clan? What a predicament. I absolutely had to find the obelisk. But failing that, I might need to take my clan to a safer place. But where? My head buzzed with all the thoughts like an upturned beehive. In fact, I'd never stopped thinking about it in all the time I'd been here. Now my head was about to explode. I shook off my thoughts and looked up with a startle. Amei was saying something, staring directly at me.
"If the Keeper agrees with my suggestion..."
I heard his last words. All eyes turned on me. I frowned, as if making up my mind, while I hurried to rewind the video I'd been making. My wife Sveta had asked me to document my every moment in Mirror World, so I had. Where was it now? Aha! Found it! Let's take a look. Ah, I see. Amei had suggested we simply loot the Forbidden City and get the hell out of here before the Noctian Horde arrived. This actually sounded quite reasonable. I had to admit that Amei's thinking was typical of a human gamer. Still, judging by the grim expressions on my clanmates' faces, they didn't like it. In any case, what was there to loot? All we had to show for our trouble were piles of snow and heaps of collapsed stonework. That was the extent of the treasures left to me by the city's previous keepers. The warriors waited for my decision. I could see that my clanmates were prepared to stand their ground. The wolves appeared calm, even though I could read in Pike's eyes his disapproval of his young leader's indiscretion. Amay stared right in front of him. This must have been his usual manner of speech. He probably thought, and rightfully so, that they were stronger. I'd already made some calculations. If Krim were to be believed, the wolves had twice as many regular clan members as they had warriors, which brought their numbers to almost 1,500. Not a good ratio compared to our meager ranks. If these NPCs changed their status from neutral to enemy, they could create a lot of problems. We needed them as friends. Never mind. Time to finish this discussion. Laosh was already at the end of his tether. I could see that. As shamans went, he was quite irascible. Just my luck. His diplomacy skills were non-existent. He'd rather call a spade, which was great if you wanted to start a war with someone, but pretty useless if you hoped to strike an alliance with them. The problem was, Laosh still viewed Amay as a green youngster who'd only ascended to the leadership thanks to his initial position as a shaman. Me, however, I could see the young man for what he truly was. A tough, albeit slightly cantankerous leader, smart and cunning beyond his years. At least he had enough sense to listen to his advisor. I'd already taken a closer look at Pike, and let me assure you, he seemed to be much more than he appeared to be. Whoever chose to view him as a shaggy ape were making a big mistake. I could bet all you want that the Wolves clan was in fact ruled not by one, but by two heads. Neither Droy nor Laosh seemed to realize that. No wonder the shaman's popularity ranking with his clanmates was at its all-time lowest. "I heard your words, O brave Amay," I hurried to announce, before Laosh got the chance to tell us everything he thought about the wolves' leader. "I heard you, and I understand your position." My clanmates' faces betrayed their indignant incomprehension. Amay, however, grinned back at me while breathing an inconspicuous sigh of relief. No wonder. This wasn't his prairie home, and he definitely overstepped the line. He didn't need a conflict any more than I did. "Still, you need to understand me," I continued. "This city belonged to my ancestors. I'm its keeper. Then a Chaldean stranger comes along offering me to loot my ancient heritage." The wolves' smiles began to fade. "I know where you're coming from, Amay, which is why I'm not angry with you," I added pointedly. "Being nomads, you can't understand our respect for the land bequeathed to us by our ancestors." Amay gritted his teeth. Pike clenched his white-knuckled fists, his slanted eyes glistening under bushy eyebrows. "Ah, so you didn't like it, did you? Never mind. You'll have to grin and bear it, I'm afraid." Droy appeared relaxed, but I could see he was like a taut spring, prepared to jump upon the wolves at a moment's notice. Laosh bared the yellow stumps of his teeth in a smile, enjoying the show. I paused. A heavy silence hung in the tent. The glares of Amay and Pike were literally boring a hole in me. Right. Time to lighten up. As you may well have noticed, I said, we can't accept your suggestion. Amay chuckled. Pike fidgeted in his place, and so did Droy, or so I thought. Laosh snapped his fingers, as if saying,
"That'll teach you."
But I raised a meaningful finger. "You're our guests. And as we well know, you can't let a guest leave with a heavy heart. If you do, he might never come back, which will bring disgrace on his hosts." It was funny to watch the change of atmosphere in the tent. Now, both wolves and owls were staring at me, open-mouthed. I rose ceremoniously. "On behalf of my clan, and in my own name, I offer our friendship to you and your people. Let us seal our union with a peace agreement. From now on, your clanmates are guaranteed shelter, food, and protection in our ancestral lands. And to celebrate our alliance, I'd like to invite you and your warriors to take part in a raid on the ancient dungeons we discovered a few days ago." There. A peace treaty to begin with. How about that? And then we'll see. The dungeon loot would sugarcoat our refusal very nicely. Now it was his turn. Amay, too, rose from his seat, albeit slightly too hastily. Judging by Pike's unhappy expression, he must have noticed it, too.
"I, the leader of the Northern Wolves, accept the friendship of the Red Owls. I swear to be a trusty friend and a good neighbor to you. And I accept your offer of hunting for your ancestors' treasures."
A good neighbor. Wow. That was lucky. And I'd thought we'd just part ways. End of story. The realization of what had just happened must have finally dawned on Laosh, who hurried to add,
"I suggest we seal our union with the magic oath created by our forefathers."
Both Amay and Pike nodded. Excellent. No problems there. The magic oathing procedure turned out to be rather simple and mundane. The system didn't offer any surprises. I received a standard message informing me of a peace alliance between the Red Owls and the Northern Wolves. The next message, however, did surprise me. I'd received +50 points to my reputation with the wolves. How interesting. We spent another hour celebrating our agreement, then parted ways, mainly because Laosh had underestimated his drinking prowess and had fallen asleep right there by the fire. Droy took Pike on a guided tour of our camp. Actually, it might have been a clever move on the part of Pike in order to leave Amay and myself alone with each other. I didn't mind. It would be a good idea to talk to him in private. We walked out of the tent and stood by the collapsed city wall. Parts of it had already been restored. My masons didn't waste their time.
"I didn't know any Ennans had survived," Amay spoke, looking at the vast expanse of snow covering the foothills.
"Some say there's a drop of their ancient blood running in Chaldean veins, too," I said. Amay chuckled.
"Don't think we have much of it left in ours."
"Maybe not."
"Can I be honest with you?"
Amay suddenly asked. "That's probably the only way we can stay friends," I said.
"Then I'd like you to tell me something, Keeper. Do you really believe you can defend this place? With a handful of Chaldean hunters? I don't think you're a match for those who are about to arrive here."
"Are you talking about the Noctians?"
"Not necessarily. My brothers made some hasty decisions, which got all their clans into trouble."
Amay nodded at Laosh's tent.
First, they failed to unite against the Noctian hordes. And then they stirred up a hornet's nest in the south, losing their...